Chapter 6, which is very religious, and ends in the cave of Montesinos. When Harvey and Mahogany reached El Toboso, the sun was beginning to set and people had come out to enjoy the evening cool. They found a bench in the small central park and sat down to watch the passers-by. An old man, strolling slowly with his hands clasped behind his back, stopped and dried his eyes with a handkerchief. "I have problems seeing clearly," he explained, looking at Harvey. "We all do," said the captain, inviting him to join them. As they began to talk, the man told them of the glorious past of the town. In ancient time, El Toboso had been a center of commerce and had won the name La Ciudad de los Cuatro Cuatros, the City of the Four Fours, because it had housed 4,444 inhabitants, the largest city in La Mancha. He spoke in glowing terms of the town's latest show of progress, a newly paved street that ran in front of the courthouse. Mahogany, had he understood Spanish, would have lamented this news of change, for he loved the old simplicity of the town. He was curious to hear of Dulcinea and mentioned her name. "Ah," said the man, "peerless Dulcinea del Toboso. I'll never forget that famous chapter where Sancho sees her for the first time and kneels down, bathed in the rays of her beauty." "What?" said Mahogany, when Harvey had translated what the man said. "That's not how it happened. I just read the chapter, and neither Don Quixote nor Sancho ever see Dulcinea. It is doubtful she even exists." Harvey translated again, and the man replied in Spanish. "My dear friend, you cannot propose to understand a novel by reading a single chapter. It is doubtful, of course, that she existed, but it is equally doubtful she did not. All things are doubtful in this world, and nothing may be ascertained. Each novel is different for every person, just as each experience is different. What you remember reading in the novel, and what I remember, are two entirely different things. Yet each one is equally as certain as it is doubtful." Harvey turned his curiosity to the cave of Montesinos, and asked if the man had heard of such a place. The man looked puzzled and replied, "There is a small cave, not far from here, but it's no more than a hole in the ground." "Could you take us there?" said Harvey. "We can go tomorrow," said the man, "but you must find a place to sleep tonight." "There is a Señora Antonia," said Harvey, "who rents beds in an apartment at the edge of town. We can stay there." "Exactly as I would have done," said the man, raising to shake Harvey's and Mahogany's hands. The apartment was easy to find, for the old man's memory was still sharp, and the señora advised them not to be alarmed when the others came in to sleep, for she was renting rooms to a woman who was studying to be a nun, and two carpenters who worked in town. Harvey and Mahogany assured her they were too tired to be disturbed by anyone. Once in bed, Harvey fell into a deep and dreamless sleep. He rested there, in the pure extension of his mind, stretching beyond the limitless gaze of horizons, until he imagined he was pounding nails, for the carpenters had returned. They were drunk and laughing, and one said to the other, "I think Teresa will be disappointed with the length of my stamina tonight." Now Teresa, a 21-year-old youth from Campo de Criptana, had been suffering from that blackness of the soul that borders on apostasy, and she had let herself be coaxed into carrying on an affair with one of the men. Every night she would wait until they were asleep, then she would creep into their room and slip into her lover's bed. As fortune would have it, "Oh, Aphrodite, Zeus, and all tricksters in heaven, this is surely the work of your hand." The Señora Antonia had rearranged the beds to accommodate our heroes, and Teresa unknowingly climbed into bed with Harvey. She was not disappointed. Such tenderness, such understanding, such delicate precision of touch, mixed with gentle roughness that sent sparks through her spine and shivers to her knees. He washed over her flesh like a bittersweet syrup of honeysuckle and rose. In truth, she had the best of two worlds. Harvey, still dreaming he was the carpenter, had begun to take on the woman's personality as well, and was loving her with the advantage of both sexes. The carpenter in Harvey was pleased to excess, for he had always wanted to make love to two women at the same time, even if it was the same one in duplicate. The narrator here breaks in. Oh, gentle reader, yes, I will allow you that one question you long to ask, that question that has intrigued mankind since the beginning of time, that question which Tiresias, soothsayer of the Greeks, answered so curiously when queried by the gods. Ask, ask now if you will. O gentle narrator, magical teller of tales, I accept your generous offer and ask, without shame or reservation, what only your captain can tell. Tell me, my dear Harvey, two-way captain of the sexual seas, hermaphrodite among hermaphrodites, tell me, my friend, is it true that sex is 9 times more pleasurable for a woman than for a man? Dear, gentle reader, you who feared not to enter this true and incomparable tale, though I do not approve of the timing of your query, still I will answer to the best of my ability. It is indeed true that for snakes, and Tiresias knew womanhood only as a spineless, footless reptile, that sex is 9 times more pleasurable for the female than for the male. But, my friend, if history has taught us one thing since the beginning of time, it is to beware of those who speak with forked tongue, lest they lead us astray from the garden of our paradise. And I say unto you now, putting to rest once and for all this ageless question, that sex is no more the same for all men than it is for all women, and its degree of pleasure is more intimately tied with one's profession than with their gender. Among the most fortunate are creative writers, for they have been known to glory on the peaks of sexual satisfaction. Yet even they cannot compete with a fearless sailor, especially if he is Greek. Footnote. Regarding Tiresias, who knew womanhood as a snake. The author is mistaken here, and his cloudy knowledge of Greek mythology becomes increasingly apparent. Tiresias, famous soothsayer of Thebes, having parted 2 coupling serpents with his staff, was transformed into a human woman, and 7 years later, separating 2 more serpents, was restored to his manhood. Back to the text. Returning to his ménage à trois, Harvey so overwhelmed the gentle Teresa that for the first time in her life she saw God. It was an ecstasy not unlike death, and she understood at once the words of the immortal 16th-century saint Teresa de Jesus. Quote, "It pleased the Lord that I should see the angel in this way. He was not tall, but short, and very beautiful, his face so aflame that he appeared to be one of the highest types of angel. In his hands I saw a long golden spear, and at the end of the iron tip I saw a point of fire. With this he pierced my heart several times, so that it penetrated my entrails. When he drew it out, I thought he was drawing my entrails with it, leaving me completely afire with a great love for God. The pain was so sharp it made me utter several moans, and so excessive was the sweetness caused by this intense pain that one can never wish to lose it, nor will one's soul be content with anything less than God. Teresa had been spoiled for men. After her night with the captain, all others would seem clumsy, rough, and incompetent, and she returned to her studies with a zealous passion. Now, when the child of morning, rosy-fingered Dawn, appeared, the carpenters were at work, and Teresa was confessing in the church. Our heroes rose, found the old man, and followed him to the cave. "Ah, timeless cave of Montesinos," said Harvey, stepping through the bramble-covered opening. It was dark inside, and the contrast with the Manchegan sun left Harvey temporarily blind. Mahogany followed, and the two stood in silence until their eyes could adjust. Slowly, they discerned the contours of the cavern. It was much larger than they had imagined, and the walls were lined with racks loaded with cheeses. At the back of the cave were several animal pens filled with innumerable lambs and kids. Neither Harvey nor Mahogany had eaten breakfast, so they built a fire and began to prepare a meal. But before they could taste the juicy cheeses, a one-eyed monster ducked through the door, followed by a rabbit and a great dragon carrying a boy on his tail. "Who are you?" demanded the Cyclops. "Every man and no man," replied Harvey. [Footnote: Odysseus escaped the wrath of the Cyclops Polyphemus, son of Poseidon, by claiming his name was No Man. As a result, when the monster called for help, the monster's cries of "No man is hurting me" went unheeded. Homer, The Odyssey, Book 7, lines 112 to 116. "Who are you?" demanded the Cyclops. "Every man and no man," replied Harvey. "No man?" roared the Cyclops. "I'll teach you what happens to insolent Greeks. Kill, rabbit!" he commanded, and the tiny creature flew into the lamb pens, plunging its razor-sharp teeth into one animal after another. In no time, 14 kids lay dead and bleeding on the ground. The monster, looking for something with which to show his own terrible strength, yanked the boy from the dragon's tail and dashed his head upon a rock. The boy's brains splattered on the walls of the cave. "Jackie!" cried the dragon. "Shut up, Puff," the Cyclops growled, and proceeded to tear the boy limb from limb, devouring him, bones and all. The poor dragon wept in sorrow, and green scales fell like rain. "Now it's your turn," said the monster, turning to Captain Harvey. He reached out his enormous, gnarled hand, and was about to seize the captain, when a golden trident suddenly pierced his wrist, nailing it to the ground. It was Poseidon, king of the oceans, come to the aid of our captain. "Polyphemus," roared the god, "you lazy, no-good, goddamned mutation of a progeny! Who do you think you are, sitting around all day, eating people who wander into your cave? I've had it up to here. I give you a home, food, and the best education a god can afford, and this is how you repay me, eating my friends and running around with this sissy dragon and hyperactive rabbit. Get off your lazy ass and get a job." Crestfallen, an enormous tear rolled from the monster's one great eye, coursing down his nose and splashing heavily on the ground. The light of the fire caught in its spray and painted the walls of the cave with sparks of blue and silver. "But, Dad," the Cyclops protested, "it's hard being a one-eyed Cyclops with monster breath. No one wants me. They always hire some nubile blonde instead." "No excuses," said the god, pulling the trident from his son's bloody wrist. Poseidon disappeared, and the beast fell silent, staring blankly into the fire. Harvey and Mahogany seized the moment and hurried out of the cave.